Welcome to IBBA Insights, providing expert advice on buying or selling small businesses. IBBA Insights is presented by the International Business Brokers Association, the world's largest nonprofit organization for those helping others sell or buy businesses. Now, here's your host, Crest Diglio.
Today's show is going to hit close to home with anyone who sells businesses for a living and business owners who may have been through the process of selling a business. Business brokerage is a difficult business with lots of ups and downs. I'm going to try to paint a picture for you. You're a broker, you get a great listing, you find what you feel is a perfect buyer, the business is now under contract and everything's going smooth. In your mind, you're already spending the commission. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you get that call. And they tell you the deal is dead. It's the worst call you could get in this business, but it happens. Now, a million things start going through your mind. What went wrong? How can this happen? What am I going to say to the seller? What am I going to say to the buyer? You also think, I can't believe I just lost $50,000, $75,000, $100,000, whatever the commission is. I promise you, it hurts. No matter how small or large the commission is, it hurts. Now, if you're a business owner listening to this episode, you might ask, what does this have to do with me? Well, I just talked about some of the things that go through the mind of a business broker when things go bad. What I didn't tell you is what goes through the mind of an experienced broker when they hear the dreaded words, the deal is dead. They have some of the same thoughts I spoke of a few minutes ago, but they also think, is it really dead? What can I do to bring the deal back from the brink? In the business broker's world, this is commonly known as business broker CPR, and we're going to talk all about that today. Now, on today's show, I have two industry experts who are going to share a story about deals that died and how they were able to bring them back from the brink. My first guest is Len Crick. I can't share enough kind words about this man. Len has done more for this industry than just about anyone I know. Len is a longtime owner of a Sunbelt franchise in Las Vegas, and although he recently retired, he still trains all of the Sunbelt franchisees. They're certainly lucky to have him because his wealth and knowledge is beyond anything you can imagine. Len has written numerous courses and workshops for the IBBA, sharing his knowledge and materials with business brokers around the world. He's received just about every award the IBBA has to offer. And it was my honor in 2015 to present Len with the Tom West Award. Len, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thanks, Chris. It's wonderful. Thank you for inviting me to be on.
No, so happy to have you. My second guest is a past chairman of the IBBA and president of Calder Associates, Steve Wayne. Steve started Calder Associates in 2002 and now has offices in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Florida, and two in Australia. Calder is a boutique M&A firm working with mid-sized companies to help them in the quest for an exit. Steve has given so much to this industry. He has freely given of his time to the IBBA and M&A Source, writing courses, presenting workshops, and chairing committees. Due to his hard work and dedication, the IBBA and its members greatly benefited from his leadership. Steve, I'd also like to thank you for joining us today.
Chris, thanks so much for inviting me on, and I'm hoping that I can bring some insights and some additional flavor to the conversation today.
I was thrilled when both you and Len agreed to come on the show because I couldn't think of two better people to talk to about this subject. So, gentlemen, I'm going to say let's get started. At this point, I kind of feel like a game show host. I'm going to ask each of you to share a story about a deal that was under contract and you thought was going to close until you heard the dreaded words, the deal is dead. Now, before you tell us how you resolved the issue, the other two people are going to take a crack at it and guess how you saved the deal. Then we want to hear how you actually saved the deal. So, Len, before the show, I flipped a coin and you get to go first.
Thanks, Chris. Well, mine is... I probably have over 18 years of doing, thousands of deals, lots of deals which had to be pulled back from the brink. I have to say there are a few deals we couldn't save. But as you know, at the IBBA, I actually did a workshop called The Deal Doctors. And this is with a transaction attorney, with a great thinking out of the box accountant and myself. And people would bring ailing deals, and we either kill it or cure it. So this was actually pretty easy to find representative examples of this. What was hard was figuring out which one to tell you. So here's one, guys. Let's see if you can figure this one out. So this happened in Las Vegas, where I'm based, was about 4 years ago. It was a pretty good sized transaction, and the buyer was being funded with an SBA loan. So we were down to just a week before the actual numbers. Oh, it was in contract. Due diligence was finished. We're ready to close the deal, and we're about a week before the numbers, that is the financial information, was going to go stale per the SBA rules. There's a certain length of time past which you can't go. You'd have to renew the numbers. And we would then have to resubmit and possibly lose the deal. The buyer could walk away and so forth, maybe get cold feet. So what happened was we needed the landlord to approve the lease assignment for the SBA loan, contingent upon funding. So, which is a normal thing that you do. And we knew who the landlord was, and the landlord had a representative there. However, right when we said, well, we need to get this assignment done of the lease, which is very important to the business, by the way, it was not really relocatable, and we're too far along anyway in the transaction. So we found out that the property manager did not have the authority to speak for the owners. In other words, he didn't have a power of attorney or a resolution from the owning entity, which was 9 family members, to represent them. Instead, we had to get all 9 of them in the family to sign this lease assignment document. Unfortunately for us, they were spread out all over the world at this point. So how do we get this deal done? We only had 1 week.
All right. Well, since I'm the host and I'm kind and generous, Steve, I'm going to let you go first.
This reminds me of something I had to do once, and we represented a company who was a public entity, and unfortunately, there was a myriad of shareholders all who had to sign off on a deal, and it's definitely never an easy thing when you try to get everybody together, but I would probably have, understanding that I really had a very, very limited amount of time, I would have tried to enlist at least 1 or 2 or 3 of the owners, and not only provide them with the scenario of what we're trying to do, but use them as centerpieces to go out to the other owners and see if they can enlist and get sign-offs from each of them remotely, so that they can have a close in an appropriate time. Because it sounds like to me it would have been an impossibility both for you or anyone else outside of the entity to not only locate, but call all these people, go through the story, and then convince them within a short period of time. So I think you really need to enlist some people who are going to be on your side as part of this and get them to carry the flag, per se, and then hopefully sign off remotely so that you can do this in an expedient way. That would be, at least from what you're telling me, the easiest way to get it done, although I'm sure, knowing you, Len, there's probably some other novel way that you've taken care of this.
Let me give you one more detail I forgot. One of them was on a cruise in the Mediterranean, a 2-week cruise in the Mediterranean. Go ahead.
Oh God.
Well, that of course that means that you were going to go to the cruise. I know that.
So you helicoptered on your way to this cruise ship, and was this prior to or during? Did you have the ability to have electronic signatures at this point, or was this prior to that happening?
No. Maybe I did, but I wasn't smart enough to know that.
All right, so I'm going to go with what Steve said, and I have no idea how you got the person on the cruise to sign without doing some kind of call, ship to shore call. But I'm gonna sit back and listen to how you solve this, because I'm really curious to hear about it.
Okay, well, this is kind of using a bludgeoning instrument to get it done. This is not high tech, and it's not all. It is perspicuity. You know, it's the willingness to get this thing done in time, and by God, I'm going to get it done. And this is the attitude you got to have as a business broker. Okay, so what I did was I found out where all 9 of them were. One was in Australia, one was on this cruise, 2 were in the United States, etc. Okay, so we found out where they all were. Then we figured out, and of course the manager was in the loop here, but he was in contact with all of them. I mean, he could get a hold of them. Even the guy on the cruise line, he could get a message to him. And so what we did was we put the document that they all had to sign, in wet ink or whatever, with a nice pen, by the way, in an envelope, inside another envelope, with another envelope inside that, and it was everything from Federal Express to DHL to you name it. And it went from one person to the next with an instruction to each person what to do and who to send it to. It was pre-addressed to the next one. The way that we did the cruise ship was we found out they were going to land in Barcelona, and we had it waiting there with an agent ready to get this guy when he knew he had to get off the ship and sign this thing, and then for the agent to put it in to the DHL overnight to Las Vegas. There wasn't overnight, but, you know, a day. And we got it done with one day to spare. So we did it in 6 days, basically, all around the world. It was ridiculous. But we got it done.
That is absolutely unbelievable. You see, a lot of business brokers might have just said, well, I guess this deal is dead or we won't be able to do that. But as brokers, that's not how we make our money. We make our money by going above and beyond and being problem solvers. So, Len, that was certainly a great story. And appreciate you sharing that with us. And congratulations that it closed. It seems like your hard work paid off. So
the moral to the story is you learn from your mistakes, right? The mistake there was not finding out in advance that all these people had to sign it and maybe even getting some sort of resolution where they gave the guy a limited power of attorney to act on their behalf. Like, that's the thing. That's why this will never happen again. Okay, go ahead.
You know, Len, one of the episodes for the podcast was Blindsided, Surprising Reasons Deals Don't Close. And it was amazing. One of the key points that came up during that was, you know, if you want to avoid mistakes or pitfalls, is preparation. And so, absolutely, so true.
So, that's for sure.
Steve, it's your turn. Let's hear your story.
Okay, I'm going to take you back a couple of years. This is probably about 14 years ago. I've been in this business now for about 16 years. And I had an opportunity to sell a school bus transportation system. It was an unfortunate situation because the school bus company was actually owned by a gentleman who died in their parking lot and, of course, left the business to his wife, who had nothing to do with the business. In fact, she was a nurse. They hired us to see what we can do, and we had a number of surprises that happened during that time. One of them, which I'll just explain, was that even in the interim of finding a buyer and then getting them to agree to the basic terms that we were looking for, we had one of the other advisors for the seller come back to us and say, oh, by the way, you need to change this into a stock deal because as a widower, if it goes on as a stock deal, she gets it tax-free. So, of course, that didn't make life any easier and it made it much more difficult. But the real issue that we had came much later on. I'm going to give you a little bit of scope of some of the work that I was doing at the time because I think some of it has some relevance. So we're a generalist business broker at the time. We were going out looking for different types of engagements, and we had anywhere from the specialty entertainment companies that was so unique that even trying to value the land and building that they owned took 2 to 3 months because they had such a unique element in their business, to companies that were excavation companies and companies that were specialty dental labs. And we had a myriad of different companies that were really under contract, you know, on listings with our company. And here came this school bus company. As it was, we were lucky enough to find an individual who was a CEO of a major health company out in Pennsylvania, who really wanted to come back to the New Jersey area where we were and then buy a business that he believed that he can prosper and run. Now, this bus company probably had about 50 smaller buses because what they did is they took special needs children and brought them to local schools. And, of course, they went through a bidding process each year and was able to secure many new contracts. And they parked it at their facility, all in one facility. They had a garage that they did some maintenance in. And then right outside that, they would store all the buses that were not inside the maintenance facility at the time every single night. And we went through the entire process. We were able to secure an SBA loan and took care of everything. And as Len had pointed out, you know, one of the things you learn is that you don't know everything when you first start out, even when you're out doing this a year or two, because there are things that are just going to always pop up that you're not prepared for. But invariably, especially with an SBA loan, you're going to get closing checklists from the bank. And the bank came back and said, we need the following things in order to close. So clearly, the majority of those things we took care of. And of course, as everybody who's ever done an SBA loan knows, that one of the things is to make sure that the real estate that's attached to this loan for the buyer is going to be around at least, even with options, for the period of time that the loan is going to be active. And in order to do that, the bank needs a series of documents, one of which is the certificate of occupancy. So about a week from closing, we called up the seller, and we asked her for a copy of the certificate of occupancy. And she didn't really know where it was, of course, because she wasn't in the business. So instead, she went back to the office, and she sent us what she did have. She really couldn't find what she needed, but she sent us some document that unfortunately really wasn't a certificate of occupancy as much as it was some kind of a document that allowed her to have some vehicles in the area, but it really wasn't, it wasn't the CO. So understanding that she's under a bit of stress because her husband had passed away a number of months ago, we ended up calling up the town to see if we were in a position to get that CO. And unbeknownst to us, as soon as we called up, we found out that the CO was really no longer in force because the zoning board had changed the zoning for that area. And the only reason that they were actually even staying there was because of a pre-existing condition. When we asked about the existing CO, what became even more of a problem to us was figuring out that they were really there illegally. And the reason they were there illegally was because the entity was not really zoned for storage of school buses or, for that matter, any kind of vehicle. The entire facility, which was like a little bit of an industrial park, and they owned one of the units there, they ended up having the use of the facility, and no zoning officer had really ever been around in a long period of time. So no harm, no foul, nobody said anything to them. On top of it all, when we found out that what the new zoning was, there was absolutely no way to even allow them to stay there because they pretty much violated everything that was out there, including the fact that they had no real fire certificate for the area because it really wasn't zoned for it. And so having that 55-gallon drum of oil and fuel inside the facility really didn't help that much either. So here we are now about 4 days before, and there is no way to close unless we can somehow figure out how do we get around this. And of course, as Crest liked to say before, you never want to lose any kind of fee. And in our case, this fee was in the six digits. So we had to be very, very resourceful and quick and try to figure out, was there any way possible?
All right, Steve. So at this point, your deal was dead, or it was looking like it was about to become...
It was dead.
It was dead. So Len, how might you have handled this situation based on the limited information we have?
Okay, so this falls under the general, category of things that come up for at the end that you didn't know about, and the you have to put the fire out, but you have to do it legally. And in this case, you had a funding agency breathing down your neck, also. And I think you said, and so whether you wanted to do something, I mean, obviously, I had to pass muster with them as well. So here's what I would do. I would relocate I would find a place that both the business could be relocated to, and I would adjust the price and give a relocation allowance. I've actually done this a number of times. A relocation allowance of what it would cost to move that business to a new location, and reduce the price accordingly.
Okay. Now, I was going to go along somewhere along the similar lines. I know you had a 4-day window to do something, but relocation seemed like a very challenging prospect, but I don't know anything else that you could have gotten done. I don't know that you can get it rezoned in time. So, Steve, I'd love to hear how you solve this issue.
I mean, any indemnification that you could give wouldn't solve the problem because the lender was involved. And even if you could indemnify the buyer and say, don't worry about it, we'll get this after the fact, that is a solution that can't work in this particular case. Go ahead.
And that's true. And of course, there's one little factor out there. I mean, relocation clearly had to be part of the answer here, at least in some way. And the problem with that, though, is that clearly it couldn't be within the same business park because nothing was zoned appropriately. And for those people who ever get involved in any businesses that have transportation, I will tell you that you just can't relocate to any zone you want. And when you get a transportation company that has full-size buses, cars, and or small-size buses, finding the proper zoning for those are extremely difficult. And the reason being that there's only a certain amount of land that any township will allow, vehicles that potentially could leak oil on, in their area. So that was really also another problem. It wasn't a matter of just going and relocating. The problem was trying to find any available space that fit the kind of zoning that was necessary for this. And the reality is that most of those types of zones usually are gone. If you try to look, especially even in the East Coast, if you look for specific zones that have vehicle storage as a potential, the numbers are extremely limited, and so therefore, with 4 days left, we had really no capabilities built in to do that. And so now we really had to start to think. And this is where it makes some sense sometimes to have really great relationships with all the people that you do work with and really understand the dynamics of their business. And so since we really checked all of the local townships, because we did take a look at and see if anything was available, even from all the realtors and even within the same town that they were in. And again, remember, we couldn't really move the entire business that far because they had a business to run and it would have changed their business model dramatically if all of a sudden the cost had risen. So what we did in order to solve this is trying to be resourceful. I realized that I had a client that had an excavation business, and part of their business, they owned a reasonable amount of land down in a neighborhood which is probably about 20 minutes from where they were. And even though they had only used it for themselves, they had at least a reasonable amount of land, and clearly it was already zoned to store some of their excavation equipment, which of course had oil in it. So trying to figure out how do we nip this and get the needle in the haystack, what I did is I went first to the township zoning office and basically begged them to allow me to write a new lease with my client, who I had already told what the problem was, and asked them would they assist me and allow for a sublease of their area for my client. They were happy to oblige because we didn't know exactly when or if they would actually move, because the reality was we only needed a lease in order to be able to close. When I went to the township zoning office, he told me that it shouldn't probably be a problem, except that the next zoning council meeting was going to be in about 2 months. So when we got into additional conversations, he told me he was able to issue a preliminary approval if I could actually show him the facilities and show him the lease and everything else. And so to make a long story short, we ended up drafting a lease within 5 hours, gave ourselves an appropriate amount of time relative to the SBA loan. And then the next day, I had the inspector there where I went through the facilities with him. He was able to give us a temporary CO, which he posted on the door, on the front door of the main office building of my client. I took the lease and I took my Trio phone, which I had at the time, took a picture of it, of the certificate of occupancy seal that was on the front window, and then emailed it to the bank, who said that that was satisfactory for the purposes of getting this SBA loan approved, and we closed in 2 days. Wow.
And that sublease was for at least the length of the loan, right?
That it was for a 6-month term with options through the end of 10 years. And what's funny about the end result is they never moved. They stayed in their facility and just kept on working.
Well, talk about being resourceful. Having good friends and you know, certainly thinking out of the box in a very short period of time. That was certainly a great story. I've got one I'm going to share with the two of you real quick, because I think it speaks on the importance of education. So I had a deal with the SBA. It was an association management company, great buyer, great seller. Everything's going smooth. We're about a week or so away from closing. I'm at an IBBA conference, and I get the phone call from the bank, and the banker's exact words were, "The deal is dead." I said, "Why?" They said, "Well, the valuation came back short." Now, it was under contract for $1,550,000. I said, okay, how short? Well, the valuation came in at $900,000. Now, that's a pretty big difference, right? So at this point, the deal is dead. I mean, that's a huge difference. So, Steve, I'll ask you real quickly first, what could you have done to hopefully get this deal back on track?
And just to let everybody know, you can't on any SBA loan. You can't, they have to be within 10%. So I can understand your pain. What I do is, and especially in all our deals that have SBA loans, I'll tell you what I do today, which is I get on the phone with the underwriters because I will. My belief is that the majority of underwriters have a lack of information that is necessary to be able to understand all the elements of value. And many times they're just looking at tax returns, they're looking up a small write-up about the business, but they may not know certain things about the business, like new contracts that were signed, projections or things that are going to impact that value or other insights that realistically would have changed things. So my first gut would have been to go back to them to see that are they playing with everything that's necessary here and possibly get a change to the valuation. And if that wasn't going to happen, I'd have to think about that a little bit more and come back with a better solution.
No, that's okay. Len, anything you could add to that?
Yeah, I think I knew how to solve that one. Okay, so the differential between the two, that's got to be subordinated seller carry. And because the SBA sees the subordinated seller carry as additional equity. And so they'll make the loan for the amount that the appraisal was at, and the balance of it, and it sounds to me like at that size, it's going to have to be probably a full standby, which means that the seller cannot get paid until the SBA loan is paid off. And by the way, just as an aside, most SBA loans do not go to term for a number of reasons. Either they get paid off early or the person decides to sell the business and it gets paid off before the business can change hands. And so, therefore, at that point, your client would get paid before the term because they almost very rarely do they go to full term. But anyway, no, I would fix that gap by doing subordinated seller carry, which the SBA would accept as long as it's a full standby or partial standby.
All right. So those were both great ideas. And let me tell you what I was able to get done. I first approached the banker and I said, is that the final valuation that came back in? And they go, well, it hasn't been finalized. I go, would you mind if I talk to the valuation company? I said, look, I teach the course on pricing small businesses, but you know, I know they're the experts. I'd like to understand what I did wrong in the valuation process so I don't make that same mistake again. We're talking about a $650,000 difference in their valuation and mine. So we went back and forth with each other, the valuation company and myself. I shared some notes with them. Well, the problem was on their end, they were looking at 7 months financials for the current year, and they annualized the business. And when they did that, it fell far short of where the business have previously ended their years. Well, what they didn't do, they didn't look at the previous year's 7 months. So I gave them the previous year's 5 years of 7 months figures to show that they were actually not behind, that they did the majority of their work in the last quarter of the most of their revenues came in the last quarter, and they were actually ahead of the previous year. So I get a call 3 days later from the bank, and they go, you want the good news or the bad news? I go, well, give me the bad news. Well, we have the final valuation now, and it still didn't come in at $1,550,000. I go, okay, give me the good news. Good news, it came in at $1,490,000. You think we could find the seller or the buyer could come up with a way to bridge the gap, either through a seller note or more cash at closing? And I said, absolutely. Went back to the buyer seller. They worked it out and the deal closed. And so sometimes you just have to ask the right questions. And the moral of my story is without the teachings and the learnings and the courses I took through the International Business Brokers Association, I would have never had the ability to go back and even question or look at or understand the valuation method and the model and the way things were done and talk about, you know, annualizing numbers and instead of doing a straight annualization, looking at different periods of time. So it was invaluable. So to me, you can't do anything in this world without knowledge. Knowledge is power, and the experience that was gained through the courses that you guys even taught was the difference between no commission and $150,000+ in commission. So, you know, that's the moral of my story.
I think that's really a good point because I know that you know, Len, myself, and you, we spent many, many years teaching and creating courses and discussing good and bad deals. And the one great thing about both the IVB and M&A source is there's a lot of very, very good, intelligent, and diligent practitioners there. And the ability to learn from each other, as well as then indoctrinate some of this information into courses, is really, really a great, great thing that I hope that a lot of the people on the podcast take advantage of. Because it's simple to just to go out there and read a book. It's not that easy to understand how things are really done in the real world. And I got to admit, I share the same feelings that you do, which is that anything that happens in those two organizations really does a lot to enhance the capabilities that I bring to the table for my clients.
You know, what I like to tell the sellers is, I mean, how many times are you going to sell this business? Once. You need to hire the best business broker that you can the first time. It's not like retail where you take the shoes, put them on the shelf again, and sell them the next day. You got one shot in that market, you know, at the time in the market to maximize your after-tax proceeds. And incidentally, I have a workshop on how to mitigate the effects of seasonality, which is what you were talking about. And one of the simple ways to do that, other than projecting the remaining months, which is a little bit dicey sometimes, is to use a trailing 12 months. In other words, go back and include that period from the prior period you're missing in the current year. It's much more, it takes out the seasonality completely, and it's a much more accurate way to do that.
By the way, when you are resourceful and you can figure out ways that make some sense, it does come back to help you later on. And it's just as an example, right now, I am selling a business for the third time in over a decade. And it's because both buyers on all levels have always said that no one understands my business quite like you guys. You are unique. And
there you go.
Bringing the intelligence that we have from the IVB and the M&A source that allows for that. And so if I looked at it, you know, our commissions on the sale of this business three times are going to be quite hefty after all these years.
One of the biggest compliments you can get from a buyer is when 3 or 4 or 5 years later they go to sell the business, they come back to you, and you feel like saying, you're coming back to me. Remember, I beat the crap out of you the first, you know, and they go, yeah, but it's like having a good attorney. You know, when you see somebody in court, you go, man, if I ever get in trouble, that's the guy I want.
Hey, guys.
That's the best compliment.
Guys, those are great compliments, and that's why I had you both on. That's certainly a topic for another show. I could talk to both of you for hours about the subject we've talked about today. I chose to talk about the ones with the happy ending because they don't seem to hurt as much. Things were able to get done. Now, if you're a business broker and you listen to the show today, I hope your takeaway is that you exhaust all avenues and use your experience to help save a deal if it's possible. Don't just accept those dead. You owe it to the buyer, the seller, and the deal to see it through to the end. And if you're looking to sell a business, I hope you learn that not just anyone can sell your business. Anyone can list a business. Anyone can show your business to buyers, but only an experienced, seasoned business broker or a business intermediary can see you through the deal when it gets rocky. And I promise you, they all get rocky. As I mentioned in the beginning of the show, this is a tough business. So, Steve, Len, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your experience with us.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, wonderful. And I hope to talk to you again and have you both on as guests in the near future. I'd like to thank the listening audience for your continued support of our show. And for more information and future episodes, please visit ibba.org. I am your host, Chris Diglio, and thank you for listening to